Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Flesh and Blood and Bone podcast. And today's episode is the first in our new segment called Bloody Bites. Ooh, spooky. This is shorter episodes, bite-sized episodes, if you will.
Wow, yes. Great title.
Very punny. These are going to be about films that my dad has worked on that his company wasn't heading, but he was a part of, or movies where he did something super cool, but it's not enough to fill up a whole episode. So, and today's episode is Evil Dead 2.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Where you worked on it and were a part of the team. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of the times when I talk about films that I love, it's just a coincidence that you worked on all of them. And I feel like that's what a lot of my friends say as well. And so I was like, yeah, we should talk about Evil Dead 2 because that's pretty rad that you got to be on set for that film.
Yeah, we didn't have a lot to do compared to...
Fair.
Mark Shostrom's company, but we were still there.
Yeah. So how did you get involved in being on this film?
Well, I was working for Doug Beswick at a company called Doug Beswick Productions.
Shocking.
And Doug did like the stop motion version of The Terminator.
Oh.
And a lot of other cool stuff. But that kind of lent itself specifically to one of the things that he had been brought on board to do on Evil Dead 2. I had worked with Doug on Aliens and done a couple little things on like Three Amigos and other shows where it's just a very small piece of something. But when we were doing Evil Dead 2, Doug was responsible for a dance scene.
Oh my
where,
God.
The headless corpse reanimates out of its grave, comes out, does a little dance, rolls its head around. Stuff like that, which is perfect Doug Beswick territory. He knows how to build the sets and build the stop motion armatures, build the puppets, and then animate it and can do it all himself. And then he was also tasked with the finale sequence. There's this, the evil entity actually materializes in the door of the cabin. And it's this giant head with big shark teeth in it. It has the smaller heads of the people that it's possessed kind of built into the side of it is sort of like boils or blisters. And at one point, one of them pops out and I think says something. It's been a while since I've seen it. And then there's a tree branch that the tree comes and reaches through a door window and grabs Bruce Campbell and tries to feed Bruce into the mouth of the evil entity that has come through the door. And I'm struggling trying to find words for the evil entity because we always just called it Rotten Applehead.
Let's just call it that.
But it was supposed to be the embodiment of the evil that is the Evil Dead.
Ooh.
And it's a giant head that fills the door frame and Bruce could actually fit in the mouth.
Wow.
So Doug Beswick was responsible for the tree branch and the Rotten Applehead, and then the whole dance scene, and then the miniature set that the dance scene took place in.
Okay.
So that's how I started. And a couple other people from Aliens kind of slid on over. Jim Belahovic did a lot of the miniature construction for the power loader for the miniature queen. And he was tasked with doing the cabin and the whole background with all the trees and the cabin and everything in the distance and the hill that she does, that the puppet does the dance on. And then Doug hired Steve Wang to do the puppet sculpture, and he's his own self-contained artist as well. So I was supposed to be like cosmetic supervisor. That's what I was on Aliens, in charge of. I ended up doing molds and castings and building stuff. But the aesthetic look of all of it was kind of what I was all about. But it was such a strong crew on Evil Dead 2. It was, you know, it was like Jim Belahovic, the cabin and the trees. He's got it. Teresa Burkett and Mark Wilson did all the skinning of the big metal armature for the tree branch. They nailed it. They all knew what they were doing. Phil Notaro and Doug and Yancy Calzada did the... mechanics for the tree branch and some of the stuff for in the head.
That being said, what was like something that you were mainly in charge of then in the team?
My main thing ended up being the rotten apple head. We did designs for it. I did a sculpture, and I forgot who did the other sculpture, but we did a couple little maquettes, little mini versions in a little doorway. It was my job to supervise the construction of that more specifically. And then, like, he gets stabbed. That creature gets stabbed in an eyeball.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured out a way to build a giant gelatin eyeball that could spray a ton of blood. Work with Vern Hyde, the effects supervisor there, to figure out like some fixtures and things that he wanted to put in the eye so he could spray it even further. And Vern had worked with the director quite a bit prior to that. So they had a really great relationship. I hadn't met this Sam Raimi guy yet. So I didn't really know much about him. Most of the conversations were like over the phone.
That's crazy.
I think we were sending faxes and stuff like that. But when it was time to shoot the live action stuff, the big tree branch and the rotten apple head, Mike Burnett and I went down to location, which was a closed down school.
Yep.
And the cabin set was built in the gymnasium of the school, which I think was also the cafeteria.
Yes.
And we wheeled everything in there and we spent at least a week. Oh, and Teresa went, and I think there were a couple other people. But like the arm, the big tree arm, it took like two people to roll it in. It was on this big welded aluminum platform, and then people had to pull these levers to make the fingers bend. And then you could rotate the wrist. Somebody else had to do that. So the hand by itself took everyone, and then it was time to do the head. After it pushed in through the doorway, we could kind of lock it in place, and we did all this sort of tendon-y stuff to kind of goop it into the door. And then I think it was mostly me and Mike Burnett behind it doing the mouth and making the eyes look around. And there was a mechanical brow. We spent a couple of weeks there, and
wow.
It was super hot and humid, and we were glad that all we had to do was
those things,
yeah.
That's so funny.
And then it was Mark Sjostrom's company that did all the makeup effects for it. And there are these two guys on the crew for Mark that I had come and gone to Mark's shop because we had to match the live action, life-size version of the dead lady puppet.
Mm.
So there were a lot of back and forths there. And there were these two guys working for Mark. One was Howard Berger.
Oh.
And the other was Greg Nicotero.
I don't know who those people are at all.
So it was pretty great. Got to meet them and then go on set, and then they were there. And they handled all the big Bruce stuff. And then we handled the Evil Dead aspect.
Right.
Around the humans, basically.
Wow. That's so interesting. And then you guys worked together again on Army of Darkness and Dividing and Conquering.
Yeah,
that.
And that was the same thing. It was dividing up the workload. And yeah. And that time they got to do all the big creature-y stuff. And on Army of Darkness, we did Bruce Campbell.
Oh, weird.
And his makeups and Evil Sheila and all that.
So you guys kind of flip-flopped the tasks on the next movie.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
For the Rotten Applehead, like the eye being gelatin and things, like how do you, because when you say that, my brain just goes like, oh, jello.
It basically is. It's the component of jello. It's just mixed a lot thicker so that it's super solid. It still has a huge water content, so it's super heavy.
Yeah.
And once it starts to dry out, it just goes to hell. But what we were doing is we were casting these sort of like triple layered eyes that would fit in his shell, that would fit inside. And he only gets Applehead only gets stabbed in his right eye. So we only had to do it there and control it for that one shot. And prior to that, he had, I'm calling it a he, I don't know why. He had white eyes, and then he also had these weird cat eyes. And they were interchangeable, so Sam could do whatever he wanted with them. And then when it was time to stab it, we took the mechanism out of the socket of the right eye and put in this rig that had the gelatin eye. That was, again, super heavy. And all you could really do was stab into it. But it was great because you could run a real chainsaw into it, and all the shit would just fly everywhere.
Wild.
And then you'd hit the blood tube and it was all under pressure. So then it would explode out.
Wow.
So each eyeball was like a one take deal.
Yeah.
So we had a couple chances to shoot that. And then I think it was an empty socket for the rest of it that we just had to kind of like dress because it had been stabbed.
Yeah. That's wild. I think when I watched a behind the scenes thing, it was like 3 months like that they were
filming
in North Carolina.
Oh, I believe it.
What a luxury.
Yeah. Well, things you used to spend more time on things back in the old days.
I wish. Take me there.
Yeah.
Doesn't now they're like, you so get much. 2 weeks. Yeah. And then you got to shoot the whole movie.
Yep.
And then you go, ah! Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's done and you're like, that was crazy. I have a lot of trauma. I feel like it's just so cool to me that I feel like you got to experience this time of filmmaking where everything's so practical, but also like magical in a way, like, and big set builds like Hocus Pocus and Evil Dead 2. Like, I just feel like you've got to be on so many really amazing film sets that a lot of people, if they were asked which film set could you go back in time to be on, I feel like a lot of horror fans would probably say Evil Dead 2 because it's so crazy. And there's so many cool set pieces, like the cabin when he's going crazy and everything's laughing and then the blood's coming through the walls. I guess it's just like, what was the experience of being on set of Evil Dead 2? Like, did you know that it was so awesome?
It honestly felt like a bunch of kids having fun.
Aww.
Because we took over this school and all the classrooms were used as different departments. It's like you'd go down the hallway and the art class would be the animators space. And then the third grade classroom next to that is the costume department. And so you're going room to room and all the doors are open and you're talking to everybody and making sure everything's happening. And then you're all heading down the hallway together to go to the gym to shoot. So it just felt very relaxed and like you weren't on a soundstage to begin with, which I think was good. But like Vern's, that footage we just found that Vern took behind the scenes, I think you can see that everybody is just a part of the gang, whether it was the script supervisor or the guy who's running the welding thing to make the lightning go, to us, to Sam. Everybody was just as silly as the person next to them. And we were all doing something that we all thought was really fun. So we were enjoying it. And I think that's probably part of what makes it work, is just the inherent fun that was had on set. There was and I'm not selling Bruce Campbell down the road. He had a lot of really hard work to do.
Yeah.
But he made it fun and he made it look easy. And and that helped set a tone for all the rest of us too, which was really great. Because he was the hardest working guy.
He's like there. Getting waterboarded half the time.
Oh, yeah. And half the time he's doing it to himself.
So true.
It's really impressive, you know?
Yeah.
But there was always a lot of laughter and appreciation for each day's worth of work.
Aww.
And I think it's a bit more corporate now. And I think the end of the day, everything sort of shuts down and people walk away. But at the end of the day, is on Evil Dead 2, people wanted to go out for dinner or go do something or hang out. And the cool thing was we were at a school and there was all this open space inside. And it's like, you could hang out and work on your stuff for the next day and have decent lighting and a space that you could lock your classroom at the end of the day. And it was just, you know, it didn't feel like work, I guess, is really the bottom line.
Yeah. We just, if you're listening to this, be sure to check out the video because we just found some old photos that my dad had, one of which is this amazing Polaroid I'll put right here of my dad with Applehead drinking a Diet Pepsi.
My product placement shot.
Yes, iconic of the 80s there, the Diet Pepsi can. But also a lot of footage that we have unearthed of this guy who shot a bunch of stuff on a camcorder. Well,
yeah, Vern Hyde, the special effects guy, he had a giant VHS camera and he would cart it around and just shoot stuff.
VHS camera?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, and then he made copies and gave them to everybody afterwards, which again, I mean, it's like people don't normally do that.
No.
But it was like, it felt almost like you were in community theater and there happened to be a film camera there more than you're making a movie. You know, it was pretty awesome. And then Vern went on and did the special effects on Darkman. And when we worked on that, he was still using a lot of these really cool, weird techniques to do stuff. Like smoke was a giant, weird tobacco smoking machine that had a pipe. And like for Liam Neeson in Darkman, we'd run tubes up his wardrobe to have him smoking and Vern was using that for like low lying smoke and stuff on Evil Dead 2 as well.
Wow.
But just a great old Southern guy that was just one of the awesome characters that we got to go to work with every day.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And I feel like this sort of like set up a lot of like relationships you continue to have today. Like you worked with Sam Raimi again on Army of Darkness, Darkman, same with Greg Nicotero and K&B, Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
What was the difference, I guess, of like your experience of Evil Dead 2 with people? And then like, how did you feel about like the progression as you guys kept working together?
Well, I think on Army of Darkness, it was more of a studio film as opposed to an independent. And I think that's where the differences start to become more obvious. But Sam still had the same running gun spirit where, you know, it was a night shoot and it was super ambitious. And the sun's coming up and he wants to get two more quick shots. So black flags would go up and are tense so they could keep somebody in the dark for a close-up reaction shot or whatever, so he could just extend his day a little bit more. But Army of Darkness was different also because we were shooting in the middle of horse country, nowhere, out in the middle of nowhere. There was nothing nearby.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, you did have to pack it up and drive a solid 45 minutes to get back to home or whatever.
Yeah, that's so different.
But Evil Dead 2, you know, we're all in hotels like down the street from the school. And
oh, yeah, so it's more like camp.
It's like you're in the suburbs making a movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Aw.
So.
I like that.
Yeah.
Is there anything from your experience on this movie that you'd like to share? Or
I thought it was really cool that Doug Beswick was asked to do things that were so distinctively different from each other. I think the common connection was the fact that they were all mechanical some point, because the giant arm obviously was the stop motion armature as well, and then the apple head, you know, had jaws and brows and all sorts of other stuff. But based on that, you know, mechanical approach to things, so many other cool things came into play, like skinning the tree bark and all that. And I got to watch people do things I'd never seen people do before and do it really well. So it was a great learning experience. If you watch in the background when Linda is dancing with her severed head, when the corpse is dancing and giggling and all that, the trees in the back, Jim Belahovic had spun fishing wire into these big nests and hit them with spray glue and rolled them in oatmeal and painted them up. And those are the leaves on the trees. I mean, it was like, I was watching people that were really talented in their field do really cool stuff. And then, you know, Steve Wang sculpting the little version of Linda. I mean, he's probably one of the best sculptors in the world.
Wow.
And just super talented with paint and everything else. So it was such a pleasure to go to work every day. And it was inspiring when everything was getting built. And then to go on set was just getting to hang out with a bunch of goofballs and actually turn it into something. So, you know, it was a good experience.
Yeah. Had you seen, I assume you had seen Evil Dead prior to this?
I think I'd seen part of it on VHS.
Yeah. Part of it. So yeah. Then they were like, hey, we're doing this sequel, Evil Dead 2. You're like, oh, what is that? I've only seen little bits of it. Yeah. You have no idea what it actually is.
No.
Amazing.
No.
He had no idea how iconic.
Yeah. So maybe it's better to go into things that way because, you know, you're just doing your thing.
You don't put pressure on yourself.
Yeah.
Or other people.
There's no perception of it's success. Just all about doing your best with.
Aww.
What you have.
And I guess, too, in that time period of being able to have more time in prep or on set, like, do you feel like, especially back then, like, you had more opportunities to experiment with something and then figure out, oh, that didn't work, and we still have time to figure out what will work on the day?
No, I feel like we just had to kind of jump in and do it.
But
it felt like everything was a variation on something we'd done before. You know, the gelatin eye was from tests from other things. And
yeah.
And it felt good going to set too, because it didn't feel like we were doing something that was so groundbreaking that, you know, there's so many things that could go wrong. It just felt, it was more straightforward and very solid. So it was really easy to go and operate.
Like, did the heads inside the apple head, like, did those prove any complications? Because there's that one that pokes out.
Yeah, that ended up just being a hand puppet. So that was straightforward. I mean, we tried to keep everything super simple because the budget wasn't big.
Super huge, yeah.
So it's like, how can we be creative with the money? And so that sort of dictated the practicality of everything.
That's kind
of
nice.
Which made it, you know, made you feel that much more confident taking it on set because there weren't a lot of things that could mess up.
I see. That's rad.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but like, did the, this is a very weird question, but I had this question on Hocus Pocus as well. Like, it's different because it's all, well, both of them were sets, but like, was there a particular smell on set? I just feel like if you put things in candles, like they try to do with Disneyland rides of like Pirates of the Caribbean water, like I feel like the Hocus Pocus exterior set of the Sanderson sisters' house is like a very particular like dirt smell. I wasn't like, there. You've no, also described
yeah, it was
that.
Like moss.
Yeah. Is there a particular scent from like being on set of Evil Dead 2, even though it's a set? Like
The smell of dried fake blood.
Love it.
And smoke.
Oh.
There's so much smoke on that set. And like there was no roof to the set, to the house,
mm-hmm.
because the ceiling of the gym was right there.
Oh, so you don't
And need- they had to have lights. So everything was a bit claustrophobic because it's only so big. So the set went like to the walls and to the ceiling where it needed to.
Yeah.
And then it was more about the noise. There was always fans and there was always smoke. There's always a lot of rain from the big fans blowing. For the stuff that we were there for, at least.
Yeah.
And then just a ton of smoke in that house all the time.
Damn.
A lot of atmosphere.
If you want to experience what it was like being on set of Evil Dead 2, just go to a haunted house. Lots of fans, lots of smoke.
Or just get a leaf blower and turn it on.
Yeah.
And then light some oil on fire and smell that.
Get a good whiff.
That's your candle.
Aw, it's like stepping back in time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I heard a thing on the internet that the apple head was like too big like to remove from the set. So somebody had said that like it didn't get taken apart and taken back to a warehouse or anything. It was just like left in North Carolina. Is that true?
I think all our stuff was left there because there wasn't any money to ship it back. So the giant hand, everything.
Just left.
Yeah, just left.
Wow.
Doug built the set for the dance sequence in his shop.
Okay.
So we were all building, you know, and then when we were done fabricating, the lights in his shop went off and it was just the lights on the set.
Mm.
And him painstakingly stop motion animating
Jesus.
This dance puppet. For I don't know, weeks, months?
Years.
I have no idea. We went to North Carolina at that time. So when we were done, we left LA with tons of stuff to take there. And then by the time we were done there, we had hardly anything to bring back.
Wow.
And all the big stuff stayed there.
Wow. The facts I saw on the internet was like it was left in the forest, but you guys weren't even shooting in a forest. So it's like,
no, there was a cabin exterior
that was left. Yeah,
that was in the forest, that was left behind.
Yeah, so I'm like, what did they do? Stop filming and then take the apple head and the tree branch to the woods and chuck it in there? Like, that doesn't make sense.
I don't know. I would assume they probably call a junk hauler and that'd be the end of it.
Yeah, I saw supposedly the apple head lived a second life of being in a haunted house somewhere.
Oh,
like
really?
Somebody bought it. I don't know if that's actually true.
Interesting.
Somebody can let us know. So it had a second life, but the people didn't know what it was from.
Oh. Like,
that it was from Evil Dead 2.
Okay.
So maybe they just threw it in the school dumpster.
Maybe, because I mean, all they really were big, like aluminum armatures with cables and stuff on them. And then sheet foam and Scott foam and latex on top of that for both those things.
It's probably rotted by now.
And all those little heads, I mean, those were all nicely done from life cast of the actors to make these little puppet heads. And I think we had them so you could move them around a little bit. Then there was the one of Bruce that kind of punches out forward. But honest to God, I think all that stuff was left behind with production as part of their, you know, their stuff.
Yeah.
Nowadays, most of that stuff comes back with us, and we're in charge of making sure it stays ready to be reused if they need to shoot inserts, like up to the day of
the movie coming out.
Movie releasing, because nowadays they'll use it for PR as well.
Yeah.
So, but back then it was like, this is the studio's property and you're going to leave it.
Wow. So. Yeah, I mean, we had the same issue for Slay, the movie that I just did. Like, we shot in Ohio, and then it was just kind of like, what do we think the key pieces we're going to need are to come back to LA? Because there was, like, a truck driving back. But otherwise, we were just like, a lot of it went to, like, an antique store in Ohio. Like,
that's great.
Our couches and taxidermy and other props from the movie are probably in somebody's house, basement, or store. Don't know. That's cool.
They don't know either.
They don't know either. It's not Evil Dead 2, though, so sorry. Can't say that, oh, this was used in Slay. Ah, but we did have a deer head.
Yeah,
there are a few homages to Evil Dead 2 in Slay, which is
great.
Great, yeah. At one point, our art director was like, he painted, we had a deer head mounted on the wall, and he painted one of the eyes white. And he was like, I thought it'd homage because your dad worked on that movie. And I was like, that would work if this was a paranormal movie, but it's just supposed to be a deer head on the wall. So maybe we should take that off. I'm so sorry. Because otherwise it'd be like, why is that deer's eyeball white?
Yeah.
So
it's half possessed.
Deer. Exactly. Possessed by the spirit of indie film. It'll make anybody's eyes go white. Anything else to add, Dad?
No, just it was a great time. It was nice to see it be so well received, and it was nice to see Sam and Rob and Bruce be able to keep pushing that franchise further. We thought Army of Darkness was the end of it. And it's just exploded today with all the TV series and different movies, and it's, you know, more power too. I mean, they came up with a great concept and it just keeps going.
It just keeps going. Yeah. Evil Dead Burns just recently came out.
Yeah.
So it's still going.
I'll see that. I'm assuming there's no rotten applehead.
I don't think so. So. But maybe it could come back in another future movie.
Sam, if you're listening.
Sam, bring back applehead, bring back the tree branch. Bring back stop motion weirdness. Well, with that, we'll wrap up our first segment of Bloody Bites. Let us know what you guys think of a shorter episode on some more condensed things where we hopefully ramble a little less than usual. And with that, we will see you next time.